ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अन्नमयं कायं गृहीत्वात्मतया बुधा महिं ममतया च बहु हित्वां ते दर्शनं गतः तेजः फायर अप वाटर Anna and earth. Mayam, composed of. Kayam, this body. Grihitva, setting. Atmataya, with the sense of I. Abuddha, the unintelligent. Mahim, this earth. Mamataya, with the sense of my. Cha, and. Ubhau, both. Hitva, giving up. Ante, ultimately. Adarshanam, disappearance. Gataha, they have obtained. So, today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 2, entitled The Symptoms of Kali Yuga, text number 44, translation. Although the foolish accept the body made of earth, water and fire as me and this earth as mine, in every case they have ultimately abandoned both their body and the earth and passed away into oblivion. Translation responsively. Although the foolish accept the body made of earth, water and fire as me and this earth as mine, in every case, they have ultimately abandoned both their body and the earth and passed away into oblivion. Purport by the servants of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Although the soul is eternal, our so-called family tradition and earthly fame will certainly pass into oblivion. ओम ज्ञानातिमिरन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे सो दिस चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द सिम्टम्स ऑफ कली युग सो At the present moment, in the yuga cycles, we are in the fourth cycle, which is Kali Yuga. So we have Satya, Treta, Dwapar and Kali. So Kali Yuga is the most degraded of all the ages. And this degraded effect comes by the influence of time. So in Satya Yuga, things are much, much more pure than what they are at the moment. So then, and in Satya Yuga, the method of self-realization is also different. I think it's meditation. And then, by the influence of time, then the duration of Satya Yuga also reduces, and in Treta Yuga there is yajñas. That's the method of self-realization. And then, by the force of time, then Dwapara Yuga comes, and in Dwapara Yuga, the way of self-realization is deity worship, very, very opulent deity worship. Of course, even in Kali Yuga, we do deity worship, but it is quite different to what it is in Dwapara Yuga. Dwapara Yuga is much more elaborate and very opulent. So, like for example, if you go to Jagannath Puri, there they offer 55 chappan bhog, Chappan is 55? 56. Okay. So they offer 56 offerings a day to Lord Jagannath. So you can calculate how many in an hour they're offering, maybe a couple or more. So that is very opulent and a very high standard. But that's not possible to maintain in all the temples in the world. So that's an exception. But in Dwapara Yuga, the standard of deity worship and opulence is also very, very high. So the simhasan is made out of gold and has emeralds, rubies, and the paraphernalia of the deity is also very, very opulent. And in Kali Yuga, again, by the force of time, the duration of Kali Yuga is reduced, and also the duration of people is reduced. So in Kali Yuga, the maximum number of years somebody can live is 100 years. But of course, we don't even see somebody living 100 years. It's very, very rare. A few people rarely cross 100. But, you know, if you live 60 or 70, you're doing pretty well. But in Kali Yuga, the method of self-realization is chanting the holy names of the Lord in congregation. So the Sankirtan Yajna. So the whole idea is that why there are different methods of self-realization, so to ultimately uplift the spirit soul which is contaminated due to coming in contact with matter. So, as this verse explains, that although the foolish accept the body made of earth, water and fire as me, and this earth is mine, in every case they have ultimately abandoned both their body and the earth and passed away into oblivion. So the problem is that we are identifying with this material body. So due to our rebellious attitude with Krishna, we have been sent into this material world, which is like a place where we can try to fulfill our desires independent of Krishna. At the same time, Krishna is trying to bring us back by different ways. So that's why in different ages, different processes are given to actually bring the living entity back. Because Krishna is actually very, very concerned for us. Krishna wants us to come back to Godhead more than we desire. So even though we might be in this process of Bhakti Yoga, there's different devotees have different levels of seriousness. But Krishna actually wants each and every devotee and each and every living conditioned soul to come back to Him more than we desire. So this whole process of Bhakti Yoga or Sadhana Bhakti is to change the desires of the living entity. At the moment, the desire of the living entity is to enjoy selfishly, separate from Krishna. And that is lust. But pure love is in relationship to Krishna. And in the material world, actually there is no love. You know, people say, I love you, or like that. You know, love is so much hyped, but actually it's not, there's no love. It is only lust, because it is in relationship to ourselves and things in relationship to us. So there is selfishness, and then there is extended selfishness. But actual love is in relationship to Krishna. So when we forget that, then the living entity is unfortunately put into material existence. Krishna unwillingly puts us into the material world. And this material world is created because of our desire. And so this whole process of sadhana bhakti and bhakti yoga is to actually bring the living entity back to its original constitutional position, which is as a servant of Krishna. So at the moment, the living entity is foolishly accepting, as it mentions here, the body made up of earth, water, fire as the self. So this, our body is made up of five material, eight separated energies, material energies, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. So we accept this body as a self under the influence of the false ego. So this false ego makes us think that we are this gross material body, and the products of this body, they belong to us. So it's me and mine. So janasya moho yam aham mameti. So by the influence of the false ego, we are accepting this gross and subtle body to be the self. Though it is quite evident, if one soberly thinks, ponders over the subject matter, one will get the realization that we are actually not this material body. But the influence of false ego is so strong that even though we might know it theoretically, but we still act on the bodily platform. So therefore in Vedic culture, there is jnana and vigyan. There is knowledge and realization. So knowledge is nice, but realization has more value. So there's one thing to know about it, and another thing is to how you act. So therefore, realization carries more weight. And we see that the sages of Naimisharanya, when they were performing that 1,000-year-old sacrifice, and then they selected Suta Goswami, after one morning, after performing their morning duties and lighting the sacrificial fire, they invited Suta Goswami to sit on the Vyasasan, and they very respectfully invited him and made the inquiries, and they said, because he is free from all vices and his character is spotless, and he has accepted a bona fide spiritual master, and not only that, but he has actually realized the conclusion of the Shastra. So realization actually carries more value and importance than knowledge. Therefore, they wanted to hear from him because he had actually assimilated this knowledge from years of experience. So therefore, this process of sadhana bhakti is to actually give us this realization that we are not this gross material body, but we are the spirit soul, servant of Krishna. And not only that, then we have to act in the capacity of the spirit soul. So the good thing with bhakti yoga, or the process of Krishna consciousness, is that of course there are different processes which are ultimately meant to bring the living entity to its original true constitutional position. So we have there is karma kanda, in which karma kanda is for those living entities who have a very strong desire to enjoy material life. So they want to do it in a pious way. So they follow the injunctions of the Shastras to enjoy materially. So therefore, there's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that men of small intelligence are attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas. So what are the flowery words of the Vedas? The flowery words of the Vedas, they promise enjoyment in the heavenly planets. Okay, you drink Soma Ras and you go to the heavenly planets like Indra, and you can enjoy for a long, long time. So that is pious material enjoyment. The whole idea behind that is that they don't degrade themselves by getting sinful reactions, but so they enjoy in a pious Vedic way. But still, because of that piety, material piety, they again have to take birth. And then they again have to die. So the living entities in heaven, when their pious credits are finished, it's like you have a debit card. So you keep swiping it, and one day when your credit is finished, okay, back to square one. So when the credits are finished, then they fall down to earth. And then again they have to generate their credits. But of course that is a very, very risky business. One can actually even degrade oneself. We have the example of who's that king who found a lizard in the well? Nigga. So he was following the karma kanda system, and so he was performing all these pious acts of charity, and he was very, very very charitably disposed, and he would give a lot of cows in donation to the brahmanas. So he gave hundreds and thousands of cows. This is actually inconceivable. That, you know, if he had hundreds and thousands of cows, how was he, you know, looking after them? Because that requires a lot of land, you know, a lot of people to look after them, and you need a lot of facility. But in the Vedic times, they had the Vedic kings were so opulent that they could actually, real wealth was measured in terms of cows, horses, land, grains, gold. So this was the standard of opulence. Unlike in Kali Yuga, where the standard of opulence is if you have an iPhone or you have a new car or, you know, plastic jewelry like that. Or you're living, you know, you can... It's not very elevated. So anyway, he donated so many cows, but he donated cows to two brahmanas. So the cows he donated to one brahmana entered the herd of the other brahmana. So he was one cow short. And then that brahman took it as an offense. And so he went to the other brahmana. I said, "You give me my cow." He said, "No, it's come to me, so it's mine." So, and that day there was a conflict, and they went to the king, and the king said, "Okay," Nigga said, "I'll give you 10,000 cows for that one cow." But he said no, because the cow entered the other herd, so he cursed him. And as a result, he became a lizard, ended up as a lizard in the well. So the Karmakanda system is actually very, very tricky, because you have to do things very precisely according to Shastra. And if you don't do precisely according to Shastra, Shastric regulations, to elevate yourself, then you can actually even degrade yourself. So though he enjoyed the credits of what he did, but for one mistake he ended up as a lizard. Then we have, there is Karma Yoga, in which because of the desire for fruitive results, when the word yoga comes, it means in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there is Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga. Karma Yoga, the living entity desires fruitive results, so he gives the results, he performs the activity but gives the results to Krishna or to God, or to what his understanding of the Absolute Truth is. Then Jnana Yoga is about cultivating empirical knowledge of the Absolute Truth. So to understand we are not the body, we are the soul, like that. And generally it leads to the impersonal aspect of the Absolute Truth. And then there is Ashtanga Yoga. So in Ashtanga Yoga the whole idea is there is Yam, Niyam, Dharana, Dhyan. Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Dharana, Dhyan, Samadhi, and there's Eightfold. So the whole idea behind that is to make the mind, calm down the mind and senses, and to fix it on the Absolute Truth. Generally their idea of the Absolute Truth is the Paramatma level. So in order to achieve success, there has to be bhakti. If there is no bhakti, one cannot actually get liberation. So bhakti, the element of bhakti is very, very important. So therefore, in all these processes, there is some element of bhakti yoga. So in Ashtanga Yoga, if they are actually, in Ashtanga Yoga, the whole idea is that they calm the mind down, and there are these six chakras, so they have to lift the life airs from the bottom to the navel, then to the abdomen, then to the heart, to the chest, then to the palate, and to here around the eyes, and then to the cerebral chakra here. So, and then they actually focus on the destination. Then they decide where they want to go after quitting the body. So if they still have material desires, then they can choose one of the heavenly planets. But if they are free from desires for material enjoyment, then they can actually meditate on Vishnu. So that is a very, very difficult process, because in this day and age, you know, who can do that? Even just doing some asanas in itself is very, very difficult. What to speak of lifting the life air. And as Krishna gives the qualifications for performing Ashtanga Yoga, free from sex desire, performing celibacy, living in a sacred place, alone, no family around, and it's hard to find that, no one can do that. And then controlling the mind and senses. But in Bhakti Yoga, it is a very direct process, right from the beginning, we engage the mind and senses in the service of Krishna. So we don't have to artificially restrain our mind and senses. And because it's seen that even artificially if we restrain, there is always a chance of falling down. Because the mind is very, very fickle. And it's always accepting and rejecting things. And even great, great yogis, who was that yogi who was meditating in the water?
Vishwamitra,
yeah. So, you know, he also fell down. So with Ashtanga Yoga and all these other processes, they are very, very risky because one has to artificially control the mind and senses. Whereas with Bhakti Yoga, we are directly engaging a mind in the service of Krishna. So when we engage a mind in the service of Krishna, it is automatically controlled. And then the senses are, as a result, the senses are also engaged in the service of Krishna. So one, right from the beginning, is engaged in Krishna consciousness. So therefore we have these, if you see all the items in Bhakti Yoga, the whole goal is to engage the mind and senses. So if you see the morning program, the 64 items of Bhakti, it is about engaging the mind and senses, right from the morning. So all the activities we do in the day, it is directly related to Krishna. And that is actually our constitutional position as a servant of Krishna. So if we engage our mind and senses in this way, but the idea behind that is that we have to do it consciously. Because right now we are doing maybe robotically or mechanically. But the whole goal of this process is to actually that we become conscious that we are the servant of Krishna in performing these activities. And when we do it in that consciousness, then we are actually free from false ego. And it's interesting. Here it says, although the foolish accept the body made of earth, water and fire as me and this earth is mine, in every case they have ultimately abandoned both their body and the earth and have passed away into oblivion. So though people can see what is happening around them, but they, in another sense, they still can't see. Though they're seeing, they can't see. So because that is the power of the material energy. And Maharaj Parikshit, he asked this question to Shukdev Goswami and the sages on the banks of the Ganges when he was cursed by the Brahman Shingi and he had 7 days to live. He said, what is the duty of all people in all circumstances and what is the duty of one who is about to die? And there Shukdev Goswami answers this question. And then he also asks, what should one, Maharaj Parikshit asks that, what should one hear, remember and glorify about? And what should one not do? So in the second canto, in response to that, Shukdev Goswami firstly describes what one should not do. And in there he actually mentions that how people are wasting their valuable human form of life. That they have so many subject matters for hearing except for about the absolute truth. And all of that is because they accept the body as a self and they are bound up by their attachments. And therefore they are so busy working for the attachment that they have no time to hear about Krishna consciousness. But they hear about all of the subject matters. So though they can see that, you know, they are getting old. They can see that their father passed away, their grandfather's passed away, they're getting diseased, their children are growing. Though they can see all that, but still, they cannot really see. In the sense that, though they can see their destruction, still they are not doing anything about it. So, this is the power of the illusory energy. But if we pay heed to Krishna's glories, if we hear chants, if we hear, glorify and remember about Krishna, then one can actually be free from the miseries of material existence. I mean, suffering will be, pain will be there, but it's a question of whether one suffers or not. Suffering is a choice. Because When one is in material existence, the threefold pangs of material existence are always inflicting one, whether one is a devotee or not. But the suffering is actually optional. So when one takes to the process of Krishna consciousness, when one hears, chants, glorifies, and tries to remember the personality of Godhead, one can only remember first if we have heard properly. So when you hear properly, and then you glorify Krishna, and then gradually we'll be able to remember Krishna. So remembrance will come if we have heard properly, and if we have, and once what we have heard be repeated, and then you can remember. So we can, whatever we have read, we can repeat it to anyone. So if you meet somebody, you can share your realizations on what you have read in Shastra. And that way you are repeating. Repeating just doesn't mean giving a class. So the different forums where we can actually repeat, and that way we can actually begin to remember the personality of Godhead. Because remembering Krishna is very, very crucial. Because the whole process of Krishna consciousness is that ultimately at the time of our death we are able to remember Krishna. That's the whole idea. So yam yam vapi smaram bhavanta janti ante kalevaram. So whatever one remembers at the time of death, one attains a certain kind of nature. So if we are Krishna conscious at the time of death, then we will attain to Krishna's abode. And Krishna says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yogati tatvada taktva deham punajanam naiti mameti sorjana. If one knows even slightly the transcendental nature of my appearance and disappearance and my activities, then one can actually go back home, back to Godhead. One comes back to me. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness is that at the time of death we have smaranam of Krishna. And that will only come if we practice this process of Krishna consciousness seriously. Of course, it can be done in a moment, like Maharaj Khatvanga, but for most people, it is a gradual process. We see with Maharaj Khatvanga, he was a saintly king, like Maharaj Parikshit, and he knew that the purpose of life is to make a solution to the four big problems, this disease, and also to guide the citizens to become Krishna conscious. But he was requested by the demigods to go to heaven and fight against the demons. So he went there, fought against the demons, and then they said, we want to offer you a boon, a benediction. Because he was not materialistic, he could have asked for so many heavenly pleasures. But he asked, how long am I going to live? What is the duration of my life? And they said, you have only one more moment to live. He said, thank you very much. And he left the heavenly planets and he came back to earth. And in a moment's time, he became fully Krishna conscious and quit his body. So Krishna conscious means he knew his position and he was acting in that capacity and he knew the glories of the Lord and he was remembering the personality of Godhead. So, but for most people, for most of us, it is actually a gradual process. That's why we have this Varnashram Dharma. There's the four orders of life: Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So the training begins right from a young age. That's why one is, in Vedic culture, one was sent to, the child is sent to Gurukul at the age of 4 or 5. And then they study, they learn how to control the senses, and they learn about the absolute truth. And if they are a desire to get married, they get married, or they can carry on. And in this way, but for most of us, it's actually a gradual process. So where we apply this process of Krishna consciousness, and step by step we get realization after realization, and Krishna actually purifies our anarthas. So by engaging in this process of Krishna consciousness, when we engage in this process of Krishna consciousness, it actually purifies us. It actually purifies our anarthas, and the anarthas are actually put right in front of our face. So, especially when we are in the process of Bhakti Yoga, we can see all our anarthas. But when we are not engaged in the process of Krishna consciousness, you cannot see our anarthas. We might think that we are fine. You know, we are doing well. We don't have any problems. But when we become devotees, when we take up this process, then suddenly we realize that how many shortcomings we have and how many anarthas we have. That to what extent we have envy, pride, jealousy, madness, greed, lust. Thank you. So all these anarthas are actually put right in front of our face. But when they come in front of our face, we should not get scared. Of course, we should feel bad. That's good. That's a good sign. But we should actually do something about it. We should not stop the process of... We should not quit the process of Krishna consciousness. But we have to go on. We have to carry forward. So, but when we initially take up the process of Krishna consciousness, we think we are a pure devotee. But as we progress more and more, we actually realize that we have a very, very long way to go. So, the more advanced you are, the more humble one will be. And they'll actually realize that there is actually, we have a long, long way to go. So, like, remember at the beginning when I was, first time I was reading Bhagavad Gita, and, you know, Prabhupada talked so much about pure devotee, and I thought, I'm that pure devotee. It's because I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, so I was identifying myself as that devotee. But over a period of time, Krishna actually revealed that we are not what we actually think we are. So we are not this pure devotee syndrome. You know, Krishna smashes that and makes us realize that we are not what we think. And Krishna actually humbles us by engaging in this process of devotional service. And that's the benefit of the association of devotees. Because, you know, we can practice, you can't practice devotional service alone. Sometimes devotees think, oh, this is too much, you know, this process of bhakti yoga, always in the association of devotees is too much. Let me go outside for a while and practice alone. So, okay, when we go outside, then there's no one to actually point out our faults. There's no one to actually rectify us. But the beauty of being, of serving in the association of Vaishnavas is that that Krishna will actually reveal a false through the devotees. And that can be very, very humbling. So we should actually accept our shortcomings and carry on in the process of devotional service and try to rectify them. And we don't have to try to rectify it personally. Simply by engaging in this process of Krishna consciousness, Krishna actually corrects our faults. So he preserves what we have and he gives what we lack. So the next chapter is the Bhumi Gita. We still have one more verse to go. And this chapter is the symptoms of Kali Yuga. So we have gone through that and we all can relate to what this chapter says. Most of these symptoms have already come to pass, have come true. And as we go further, the age of Kali actually gets more and more degraded. But that doesn't mean we don't have to do something about it. You know, one might think, okay, you know, we're in the age of Kali, so it's just going to get worse and worse. So, you know, what can we do? You know, that's like saying, okay, if it's raining, we won't use an umbrella. We'll just walk in the rain. What can we do? It's raining. You know, if it's raining, we do something about it. We'll make a shelter. We'll find an umbrella. We'll go in a car. So if we are in this age of Kali and things are getting worse, especially as devotees, it is our responsibility to do something about it. And that was actually the mood of Srila Prabhupada. And if you read Srila Prabhupada's purports, especially in the first canto of Bhagavatam, that again and again he stresses, he gives actually solutions how to counteract the age of Kali. So the primary means of counteracting the age of Kali is propagation of the holy names of the Lord. That's the prime, because not everyone can understand philosophy straight away. So the holy names of the Lord has to be propagated through the Harinam Sankirtan. as Harinamananda Prabhu has taken it as his life and soul to spread the holy names. And so by that way, there can actually be a change in society. And by distribution of prasadam. And then Prabhupada says that it is very difficult to change the leadership in Kali Yuga, because they are not Krishna conscious. So the way you make a change is you approach from the bottom up. So you make the general public Krishna conscious, and then they will select a leader who is Krishna conscious. So that's the primary means. Of course, if a leader is Krishna conscious, then they can have a very big impact in society. That's why Prabhupada also, he gave a lot of importance. He spent a lot of time with very prominent personalities. He would give them time. But at the same time, he was preaching to the masses. Because if you make the masses Krishna conscious, then they will naturally throw out the leader. And in the first canto, in the purpose, Srila Prabhupada gives so many amazing points how to counteract the age of Kali. And he says that there should be 2 compulsory days of fasting in the state, if the leadership is Krishna conscious. 2 compulsory days of fasting, and which is good for the economy, good for the body, from the health point of view and from the economic point of view. So much tons of food stuff will be saved. And one can also progress spiritually. So that's a couple of ekadashis there. Minimum, Prabhupada says. That's the minimum austerity. Because dharma stands on 4 legs. On principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercifulness and truthfulness. So it says that the young boys and girls should be married at the boys at the age of 24 and girls at the age of 16. That should be compulsory. This is like, you know, pretty radical if you go and tell that to someone. So, you know, marriage should be compulsory. And then Srila Prabhupada mentions that hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam should be compulsory. Everyone should hear the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. And this should be taught. And there should be widespread chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Everyone should chant. And they should, he mentioned something about gold also, because gold breeds lust, envy, because gold is one of the places where actually Kali resides, along with where they slaughter, intoxication, gambling, illicit sex, but also in gold, Kali resides. So, he says gold should be, I think Prabhupada mentioned gold should be standardized. You should get rid of the current currency and there should be gold coins. And yeah, this is an interesting point. He mentions that with gold, that it should be distributed in terms of quantity, not in terms of quality. Something like that, Srila Prabhupada says. Anyway, it's in the first canto there. Chapter 17, verse number 24. You can check it up. So I'll stop here and see, are there any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
As you say, Manasi fall down from independence to find more credit.
Yeah. Yeah, one can't acquire further credits over there. So, one actually lives out one's pious credits on the heavenly planets. So you're living out what you've done. You're enjoying on your merits. So one has to come to earth and again accrue further karma. That's right. Well, they do get reaction. We see so many of them get cursed. You know, even in heaven they get cursed. And they come back. they get cursed and then they end up somewhere else in earth or somewhere else. But generally speaking, they don't, they actually live out their credits. So in earth they again accrue their pious credits. That's what I've understood.
Yes. Unless the sadhu enters the equation.
Unless
the sadhu enters the equation, like Narada Muni or someone like that, who's travelling in the heavenly planets and upsets the Akshara and encourages the Buddhists to perform austerities and pious activities and produces Krishna consciousness into that society.
True, yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Unless a devotee goes there and he... devotee can change things. So devotee can engage them in the process of devotional service and as a result their karma gets wiped out. But generally in heaven it's hard to practice pure devotional service because the one is bewildered by the heavenly opulences. Yes, Prabhupada.
You mentioned Krishna consciousness quite many times. Can you explain what
you mean by Krishna consciousness? What Krishna consciousness is? Okay. So we all are conscious, right? Everyone is conscious. If you are alive, you're conscious. So now we are conscious, as this verse says, we are conscious of our own body and mind, and everything in relationship to that. So Krishna consciousness means to change that and to become conscious of Krishna, to be conscious of Krishna's needs, what Krishna likes, and to give pleasure to Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. So we are not in the process of Krishna consciousness that we are not concerned about our pleasures, but we are concerned about Krishna's pleasures.
So we have to please Krishna's senses.
Yes. And then we are Krishna conscious.
Not our senses.
Not our senses. We can please our senses, but, you know, then we'll end up here only, and you won't be happy.
No. By pleasing Krishna's senses, then we are.
Yeah.
Because we have cursed Krishna.
Yeah, but a devotee doesn't. Motivation is not that I'll please Krishna's senses so I'll be happy, but they just want to please Krishna's senses. And that is automatically one is blissful. Because that is our constitutional position. Krishna is? Why do we get the feeling that I'm doing so much but Krishna is not looking after me?
Yeah.
I think because it would be because we don't want to go.
Because of anarthas.
Yeah, ultimately it's anarthas. I think because we still have a strong desire to enjoy independently of him, and we are doing, even in devotional service, we are doing things our way. So, you know, therefore then we don't see Krishna's hand in it, and because we want to do things we like to do, and therefore, you know, Krishna is out of the equation, and therefore we are not Krishna conscious, and then we feel Krishna is not, you know, Krishna is not looking after me. But if we do what Krishna wants us to do, coming through the spiritual master, then we'll actually be able to perceive Krishna's protection, and we'll be able to see Krishna's hand in our life. That's my realization. Anyone like to add on that? Yeah, false ego. He's saying false ego gets in the way of a devotional service. False ego gets in the way of a devotional service. Any other questions? Yes, sorry.
Krishna reveals your fault to other devotees. At one point you start thinking that I'm that devotee who is even the best
possible. He's saying that, you know, as I said, that Krishna reveals our faults to devotees.
Yes.
So the devotee could be thinking, I'm correcting this devotee and therefore I'm revealing his faults. Yeah,
the false ego, that
should not be our mood, you know, unless one is in a position where of responsibility, where one has to look after devotees and they're taking guidance from them. But still one has to be very, very careful. But in general, the mood should not be that, okay, you know, I'm a devotee, so I'll go around telling everyone, pointing out their faults. Generally, if we are pointing out other devotees' faults, we have those faults in ourselves. Those very faults we have in ourselves. So it's generally it's the duty of the spiritual master to reveal his disciples, his or her disciples' faults. You know, the other disciples shouldn't go around telling the God brothers, you know, this God brothers, God sisters, these faults you have, you know. Those faults are within us also. So it's the duty of a guru or some very senior devotees who we are taking guidance from that they can actually reveal our faults. But we shouldn't go around telling. That is pride. Yeah.
Can we ask someone to correct ourselves?
Yeah, we should. Yeah, that's why we have a Diksha Guru and we have our Shiksha Gurus. So, our Diksha Guru might be around for some time, you know, then they're generally traveling. That's why we have so many Gurus. And we have to learn to take guidance from them.
So that we should learn to take and give criticism at the same time.
We have to?
Learn to take and give the criticism as well as take the criticism positively.
Ourselves or others?
As I mean, if you can give criticism, at some point you will be criticized as well, right?
Yeah.
That should be our understanding. I mean, you should be ready to correct it. If you want to correct somebody, it's out of your so you can progress more in the devotion.
Yeah, but you have to see what your relationship is with that devotee.
Unless you don't establish the relationship, you cannot.
And also, are we doing it out of a desire to put that devotee down? Or is it with a genuine desire to help them? So we have to see our own, we have to very closely see our own motivation. And then you have to see, is that devotee senior to you, or is equal to you, or junior to you. So then that also comes into account. Generally we don't go around, you know, correcting senior devotees, even if you see a fault, because that's not proper etiquette. So one has to take that in account. But if we, the Vaishnava teaching this, if somebody is defaming us or criticizing us, we should actually be happy. There's that story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur where he was blasphemed by this one particular man and his disciples were so angry that they wanted to kill him, you know, beat him up, but he would say no, you know, he's actually pointing out my faults. And then one day that person died. And then all the brahmacharis, they were beating the mridanga and kartals, you know. Then he died. He's been blaspheming a guru. But actually Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was crying. He was crying because he said, now nobody is there to point out my faults. So, you know, speaking that, okay, yeah, that should be a mood. It's not very easy. When we are in that position, we immediately rebel. We fight back. If somebody criticizes or says anything bad about us, because that really hurts a false ego. So, but that should be the mood. But if somebody is glorifying us, we shouldn't be very happy. You know, then we are suddenly elated when somebody is glorifying us, you know. We are on cloud nine. But if somebody is criticizing us, then, oh, make me angry. Though we might not show it externally, but internally we are very agitated and upset by it. So that's Amanina Manandena Kirtaneya Sadahari. So one should be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all desire for one should be ready to glorify others, expecting none in return, expecting no respect in return. So that's real humility. So we have to be very careful if we are correcting someone. What is our true motivation? Do we want something out of them? Is it we are correcting them so we can get service out of them, or we are genuinely trying to help them? Anything else? Okay. Grantharajan Bhagavatam Gidai Shila Prabhupada Gidai.